This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Friends, welcome. Over the next 3 weeks, I'll be finishing the research on a wealth of true crime cases from Murder Mile that you've never heard before. Ooh. If you're new, this is not a regular episode. This is New Blue. Last time, I interviewed my old pal, Paul, alias Police Constable Arsenal Guinness, about the day-to-day aspects of being a bobby on the beat. This time, I had the pleasure of interviewing Sally and John Midgley, two retired police detectives and a lawyer, who investigated many serious crimes during their time at CID, and now they reinvestigate cases in their own podcast, True Crime Investigators UK. As before, this isn't a series about exciting tales where cops bust crime. This is about the nitty-gritty, the everyday details of being a British police detective. Split into three episodes, the day-to-day, police interviews and crime scenes. In this part, part one, we will dive into what makes a good detective, the recruitment process, the workload, social life, and whether you can ever truly switch off from being a detective in your everyday life. If you want to know more about the murder cases they've worked on, check out their podcast, True Crime Investigators UK. There's a link in the show notes. Like most podcasts, we recorded this remotely, so the sound isn't perfect.
We've missed out once.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we did a recording and it hadn't interviewed. It hadn't recorded.
And it was an hour, well, a good hour's worth. And
I had to get the swear box out.
Oh, I can imagine.
But we get there.
We'll talk all day.
Well, John will talk all day. If talking was an Olympic sport, John's a gold medalist.
Initially, I was going to record the episodes with John and Sally individually. But as you can hear, John and Sally are great fun. So it made sense not to.
Oh, great.
We contradict each other.
Brilliant. In that case, that makes it easier. As long as
Right. So let me introduce you to John and Sally.
Well, my name is John Midgley. I was a police officer for 30 years in the East Midlands area. I joined in 1977 and I retired in 2007, so 15 years ago now. I describe ourselves as like a documentary type podcast. We actually recreate our police careers, if you like. We go out, we go to the scenes of crime, we go and find witnesses, people who are still alive and, you know, can remember the events. And then we've now gained quite a big circle of professional people, like a forensic psychiatrist, fingerprint experts, DNA experts. And of course, we try and bring them in at the appropriate times to add a professional opinion on what's happened and why it happened. So from the gatehouse, now the cafe, How far is it approximately to where Joan was found?
I think it was about a mile.
So she'd walked a long way away.
Yeah, she had walked.
And then she'd left the track and gone up into where she we're got, going got, to. Gone
and I'm Sally. I'm the wife that John keeps referring to. And I was a police officer for 12 years. From there, I completed the bar vocational course and was called to the bar as a barrister. And then I was approached by somebody from the Crown Prosecution Service and asked to go and do crime. So I went back to my roots.
Obviously, when Sally says, I did crime, she means as a lawyer, not as a criminal. At least, that's what I hope she means. Before becoming a police detective, where do you start and what makes a good detective?
As a police officer, you basically have a 2-year probationary period. And that means that you're a uniform bobby and you do general police work. Members of the public will see the police. You know, we can see it a lot more now on TV. There's a lot more coverage, obviously, on the internet and all the different media sources you've got. But then, of course, you know, there were Z cars on the telly and things like that.
Oh, showing your age.
And of course, you saw the uniform bobbies on the street or driving panda cars as they did. So when you joined, you know, I thought, well, I like
probably
this.
Probably had an idea.
So I got involved and then you didn't have interviews for jobs like we have today. You did your work, and if you showed an aptitude for detecting crime, ability to talk to people, that's the backbone of the police work, really. And of course, you know, to talk to people, to get, because all the information has to be obtained, and if you can talk to people and they get on with you and you can probe the questions and get the information, be it a witness or a suspect, you know, it's something you, like any job, something you either take to or you don't. It's a 24/7 job, to be honest. And that's the way it was viewed. You worked mainly a day shift because most of the detective work initially is people who've been arrested during the night or by uniformed officers. You know, they've been caught burgling houses, factories. There's been a big fight or a robbery or a murder, depending on what it is. They're in the cells when you go to work. So the main initial day shift would deal with those matters.
There was a time when John was in CID and I was in uniform, and we used to work opposite shifts.
Oh, wow.
So if I was on an early or a day shift, sort of 6 a.m., 2 p.m, 8 a.m, 4 p.m, that kind of thing, John would be on a late shift. So he would be working 2:10 lates or 4 midnight or 5:01. So we worked opposite each other, and we used to have one day off a month.
Oh.
And it was a Thursday. I can always remember. It was a Thursday. And the only reason that I knew that John had been in and out the house was when I got home, there was nothing in the fridge. And what we used to do when we were both in CID, what I used to do at night, and to a certain extent I still do it now because it's a habit, I put our clothes out for the following day.
Oh, wow.
So that if we were called out, if one of us were called out, you could just grab your stack of clothes so you weren't disturbing the other one. And there were times when, you know, sort of 2-3 o'clock in the morning and the phone would ring, and sort of quite bleary-eyed, I'd answer the phone and they would say, can I speak to DC Midgley? And of course, we were both DC Midgley. So I would say, which one? And if they said John, I was like, yes, it's for you. It's not for me. Take your clothes and clear off and I'll go back to sleep. So it was just a way of life.
Sort of, if you went on holiday, you know, it was sort of accepted that you're on holiday. However, we have been recalled from holiday.
Really?
And that was for court cases mainly, which is another issue with police work.
That was when we went to the Isle of Wight, wasn't it?
It was.
I can imagine. Can you choose between assignments? When, like, a case comes in, can you go, I don't want to do that one?
Yes, no. I was going to say yes, and you said no.
Yeah. I mean, we do contradict each other quite a lot.
The reason I was saying yes, obviously, if it was somebody you knew or there was a conflict of interest, I suppose, is what we'd, the modern term, you would say, well, you know, am I the right person for this? But generally speaking, you all just mucked in together.
How did detectives get assigned to cases?
You know, everything that the police, the uniformed police and everybody else is all on that radio system. So you'd have that on your desk and you'd be listening to what's happening. And if you picked up that there was something of interest for the CRD department, you very often go out and arrive when the uniform arrived.
So you're not actually waiting for it to come in, you're actually kind of keeping your ears out and thinking, that's ours.
Yes, oh yes. You know, there'll be some times when you're if you're interviewing in the cells and whatever, you don't have a radio on, of course. So, but then, of course, if the radio operators, again, you used to have like a local radio room, didn't you, in the police station. And, of course, we knew everybody. They knew us. They were civilian staff. And they'd think, that's interesting. I bet the CID want to know about that. So they'd ring your office or they'd give you a shout on the radio and say, John, you know, this has just come in. Are you interested? Are you free? Can you attend? And if you could, you did. And if you couldn't, you'd say, well, no, I'm tied up with this, but I'll catch up with it later. The early turn detectives used to, you know, if people had been arrested in the night and lodged in the cells, and they'd leave a precy, as we used to call it, saying what the circumstances of the arrest, you know, they were found in somebody's house, coming out with a bag full of their belongings, they burgled the house, so they were arrested and locked up. You'd pick that job up in the morning, so you get work that way. It was
called mopping up.
Mopping up, yeah. And of course, you were never unemployed because there was always something going on. And you know, we've talked about being on call and the long hours. And we used to say that there's in the stores, the main stores of, you know, your headquarters for each force, there isn't a cupboard full of bobbies waiting to be activated to turn out. What you got was what you got, and no matter what it was, you had to deal with it.
I'm guessing that, you know, like a regular job, I hate to use that phrase, but regular job, you know what you need to do, whereas because policing is so organic, it kind of happens. How do you balance out all the jobs that you have? Because I guess when one comes in, another comes in on top.
Very much so, and regularly does. And, you know, anybody who's listening to this who's a serving police officer or retired, they'll be all saying, yeah, that happens to me. it's replicated throughout the country. We all operated, although separate forces, and as we've said, basically it operated the same. The big cities had major incident teams, so they were dedicated to do that. But certainly the provincial forces didn't have that staff at those days, so you just dealt with everything.
Do you know when you're involved in a case and you're part of a department, do the other detectives have access to your files, or are they your files, your case?
No, the everybody, I'm going, you know, again, back in time.
Yeah.
But we actually used paper in those days.
What?
Paper and a pen. And
wow.
And of course, all your paperwork was on your desk. You had a stack of baskets. When you ever see any old photos of police stations, whatever, certainly in CID offices, you had a stack of baskets, and those, all your paperwork was there. So, you know, if you were ill, or, you know, God forbid, you know, you'd been carted off somewhere, you know, had an accident or whatever, whoever was in charge could go to your desk and look at what you've got and what needed doing. And that's the way it worked. So we all knew in the office generally what everybody was doing. And so you knew what they were up to. But
is there like a daily meeting where everyone discusses what their cases they're on?
Yeah, I mean, different bigger police stations, you know, where there's a lot happening, say in a city centre, you know, they would have like a daily briefing or something like that, wouldn't they, Sally? You were in the city. But in where I worked, of course, you just sort of, it was just general gossip. And of course, you were working so long hours that you knew roughly what everybody
wasn't
was
gossip.
Doing. Well, no, I mean, it was...
It was a general chat.
And of course, when you've got major crime, you do have a full... When you day one and it's, you know, you've got a murder or something really serious, you meet and like you see on the TV, you have a briefing by the senior officer who tells you what's all about and what he wants you to do.
I'm guessing with provincial policing as well, a lot of the same faces crop up again and again. You were quick on the then.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure, and Sally could, if we named certain families and names now, their family, themselves or their offspring will no doubt be still there and doing the same thing.
Well, we worked, when we were both on CID, we worked in the same office, didn't we? The same CID office. Yeah, that's a different issue because you are a different person at home than you are at work. So, and it was only for a very short time. And then I moved on to the city, didn't I? And you stayed
in the sticks.
Did you have to call each other like detective? You couldn't call each other the names you'd call each other at home.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, we all knew each other, even like the bosses, you know, you get to know, they were your work colleagues and also your friends. So it was sort of, everybody generally called everybody by the Christian name.
Yeah, I mean, relationships weren't encouraged. They weren't frowned upon as such, but they weren't encouraged. But the fact was that John and I met when we weren't at work. It was over a fight in a car park. But that's a different story. It wasn't between ourselves, no. We met again in the same nightclub. That was 1986, and I've not been able to get rid of him since.
Oh,
but the argument was all settled, and
it was just one of those things.
Because policemen are human, and they have the same issues as everybody else. And just because you don't make you immune from anything, and you know, we've seen a lot of bad things policemen have done on the news fairly recently, but you know, they're human, and they have, everybody who's, you know, in yourself and many others will relate to what happens in real life, and it happens to the police as well.
Can you remain a policeman if you've been arrested for something?
Generally speaking, if you've been arrested and, you know, there's no evidence, or you've been released, or, you know, I would think clearly they're not very pleased, but if you're convicted of offences, and be it internal discipline or a criminal offence, you know, generally the rule of thumb is that you'd go, wouldn't you?
And that's happened in our time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Again, the modern age is sort of different, isn't it, now? You know, you've got people...
You used to be suspended, didn't you?
Yeah.
In our day. Yeah. Back in the day, if you were arrested or being investigated for something, you would certainly not be at work. You would be suspended from duty, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the departments that deal with the internal discipline, you're investigated like anybody else, and you don't want to be on the wrong end of a investigation. So you know, people think it's, you know, your buddies, and it's not, because you're always open to scrutiny. Later on, you know, whoever's investigated within the force, you know, you've got to, it's all recorded, all the state, you know, like any other criminal investigation, exactly the same. So there's no favours done.
No.
When you're not working, can you ever switch off? I only ask this because a mate of mine who's a copper, and every time we're in a pub, he always sees and hears things, and I think, what's he looking at? And he's always... There's always a crime that he's looking at, or a potential crime. Can you actually switch off?
You never do. We always see things, and, you know, we don't take part in minor things, but we've been out and caught burglars, haven't we, Sally?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Can you remember, we went, it was the end of November one year, and we were just going to go and do a bit of Christmas shopping at a garden centre. And we drove into the car park, and it was raining, and all the cars were parked near to where the entrance was. And then there was one car parked right in the opposite direction, right up at the top of the car park with a couple of guys in it. And as we drove into the car park, we both went, hello, this is not looking good.
Your spidey senses were tingling.
And John just said, they're up to no good. Why are they sat completely at the other side of the car park?
And they had the obligatory baseball caps on. It was completely wrong, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were trying not to be there and thinking they were, you know, parking out there. And you just immediately drew their attention to them.
If they'd have been parked with the other cars, you would never have noticed them.
And I thought they were going to rob the premises, weren't they? The shop.
The garden centre. And so John and I were bobbed down in these trees in the pouring rain, watching this car.
With binoculars.
And John gets on the phone.
We had mobile phones then.
We did have mobile phones then. So John gets on the phone to the local police and sort of said, you know, we're watching this car. We think they're up to no good. As we got off the phone and we were waiting for the police to come, two other guys came walking across the car park with very large holdalls. And they lifted the boot of the car up and they put these holdalls in the boot of the car. And it was obvious that they were rummaging through whatever they'd got in the holdalls. And then they started to drive off. And I went down to the road just to see them go past to see which direction they went in. But it was kind of the two of us. And was there four or five
four
of
or five.
Them?
We weren't going to
tackle
them.
There's no way we were going to tackle them.
No squealing of tyres as you chased down the road.
No, they drove out quite quietly and went down the road. And as a result of our phone call, they were stopped. And they were found with all the booty from this burglary.
Yeah, and they burgled a house round the back of the garden centre.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's just one of many. And even now, we still, if anything we see, we always ring it in. And, you know,
John has been known to roll round the road with various people.
Yeah.
trying to stop them doing various things. And I do remember one time when you caught that guy that was in the field next door to us. John had gone out of sight. I'd rung the police and this guy was fighting with John. And then they'd both gone out of sight, which obviously I was worried about. And then John appears back at the door when I'm still on the phone to the police. And he's got this guy's jumper in his hand. and he just came staggering in. He was puffing and blowing. And he went, I've got to get myself fit. And I said, you're joking, John. He was half your age and twice your size. I don't think it's anything to do with your fitness. I think he was just a young man. And a very big young man, and he got the better of you, but he did go running through our village with
bare chested,
because John had got his top half of his clothing. So
good work.
And they burgled a house up the village. So yes, but we still get involved, but not as much as we did.
That's only the two of the things that we can mention. I mean,
oh my lord,
we could do a whole morning on jobs that we've been involved in when we haven't been at work. But
I guess are you always a copper then? Having gone through all the training, you're like it's part of who you are now.
I think
yes,
that's right.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, all our friends and people, you know, we know what we did, and we don't actively. Professionally, of course, we're finished. But if we've got something, and especially if it's
don't say we're finished.
No, I mean we haven't got the authority anymore, have we?
No,
we're a normal citizen in the street with the same powers of arrest as a citizen in the street. We haven't got police powers anymore, so you've got to be a bit careful. But we generally try and just ring it in, don't we?
I would still say we have that nous.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Years ago they used to call it copper's nous. And I can remember very recently we went up to Manchester and we were just walking in the street and there was two guys that came behind us, and as we were walking along, John was chattering away, and I just said to him, I don't feel very comfortable. I really don't feel very comfortable. These guys were just too close. So I was hanging onto my handbag and we just veered off and these guys went in the opposite direction. But it's that kind of feeling. I'm really not happy with who's around me. And because I can say to John, I'm not happy, he knows what to do. He knows, you know, to go in the opposite direction or...
Well, we both realised that you first and then me, that they were either going to steal your handbag or, you know, try and dip in your handbag or whatever. And when they realised that we'd seen them, they went quickly another way.
Yeah, so, just glare at people. Yeah, just have eye contact with them.
They're obviously up to it.
Do you think that being a police has actually made you live a safer life? Or are you more kind of critical and thinking that there's crime everywhere? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think we see things that general public probably wouldn't see, like Sally's just explained. And we do see these things, don't we? And we do keep out of certain areas because we know what goes on down in those areas. So you keep out the way.
And when we are anywhere, we always sit facing the door.
Yeah.
That's weird. My friend Paul, who's a copper, says he always goes into a pub and checks sight lines and he's back. Yeah, that's weird. Is that police training or does that slowly become a natural thing?
I think that becomes a natural thing.
And
you know, we through work, you know, when we were working, you deal with all sorts of crimes as we've said, and you know, you think, just these poor folks minding their own business, and then, you know, this has happened to them. And they probably could have took avoiding action sometimes, but didn't realise what was happening. Whereas we would twig that now, you know, over the years. You've spoke to so many people who've been robbed or burgled or whatever, that you sort of get the behaviour.
In fact, only last week we were talking to a lady in a shop, a clothes shop that we went into, and she was talking away, and she was saying how she used to do car boot sales, and she said, oh, this lady came talking to me about some of the items that were on her stall, and she was saying, oh, I'll give you a fiver for it, and she said, I got a £10 on it. And she said, I was sort of saying, no, that's too cheap. I've put a tenner on it and I think that's a good price for it. And she said, and do you know what had happened? And both of us said, somebody else who was with the woman was nicking the other stuff off your stall. And she went, yeah. She said, my car was open and my bag was in it with my phone, my wallet. You know, my purse and all these other things in my car. And she said, because I was chatting to this woman, and that's one of those things where if that had have happened to us, one of us, we would never have left the car undone. But,
no.
You know, you just know the distraction technique. Mm. And, of course, when we said, oh, don't tell us that other things off your stall were been stolen, and she said, no, it was my car, it was open. And it was almost like, how did you know that? How did you know? Yeah, well, that's just because we're just too suspicious. But yeah, I think people are still quite cautious around us.
Yeah, and if we meet people, could be wherever, on holiday or wherever we are, who don't know us, and you get chatting and say, "What? Oh, we're policemen," and you can see the eyes widen, thinking,
"Yeah, I'm not." There was a story I was going to tell you, but now I'm not.
I'm guessing as long as they're not at a garden centre doing a burglary, they're okay.
Yeah. Don't ever burgle a garden centre.
Yeah, don't ever park your car away from the other cars.
Very wise. Always look behind you and see who's in the car behind.
Yeah, and always face the door.
Very wise. I think
so. There you have it, the day-to-day details of being a British police detective. Thank you so much to Sally and John from True Crime Investigators UK. Join me in the next two episodes, where we shall be discussing the nitty-gritty of police interviews and crime scenes. But before that, as in every episode of Murder Mile, here's Extra Mile.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So there you go, folks. Hope you enjoyed that. That was part one of series two of New Blue. Thank you very much to John and Sally for taking part in that. We've got two more coming up. So next week we will do interview technique, and the one after that we'll do crime scenes. So if you go into the show notes, of course, there will be a link to John and Sally's podcast, which is True Crime Investigators UK. And on their website, they have loads of things like photos and notes, all concerning all the cases that they're involved in. So click on the link in the show notes. And also thought, as a nice treat, I'd introduce you to a little clip from their show. They're a really, really interesting show. It's, as mentioned, it's True Crime Investigators UK. They dive into kind of some of the cases that they've worked in their career as detectives. So I thought it'd be nice for you to kind of hear a little piece. So here you go.
And just coming here, I don't know what I expected, but it's far more isolated, far more rural than I anticipated it would be.
Yeah.
And when you look up there and you see that tree and you see box cops, and that's where it... And it's a lovely place. It's a beautiful place. You know, today it's a winter's day, but it's a nice day. The sun's shining. And this is where it all ended for us.
Yeah, what strikes me where we stood is that I think Thomas Stillwell, in some records we've read, mentions being at that tower, doesn't he?
Yeah,
definitely.
He could see some distance if anybody else was on foot coming into the valley. And if the coast was clear, so to speak, that could be very well when he came down and spoke to Joan or whatever he was intending doing.
Up there is a brilliant vantage point,
isn't it?
It is,
yeah. And, you know, if you got the inclination as Stillwell had, you could easily stalk and intercept anybody you wished.
It's what I would call a good hunting ground.
If you're new to Extra Mile, if you're new to Extra Mile, what is going on? If you're new to Murder Mile, this is Extra Mile, the unscripted, unedited bit. This is really weird for me because normally I record Extra Mile having just done the record, but obviously that I recorded this with John and Sally a couple of weeks ago, so and I've just finished editing it, so now I'm adding an Extra Mile. It just feels really weird. Anyway, normally I'd dive into some extra details about a case, but not in this case because everything was in the episode. So I'll do some quiz questions, have a little bit of a waffle, then we'll do some answers. So just six quiz questions today. So answers very shortly. Here we go. How many years' experience do senior officers like constables need to have before joining CID? Well, how many years is preferable? Question two. What 1950s police TV show did John mention? Question 3. I called it Murder Squad, but what was it properly called? Well done, Michael. That was a good question there, but badly written. Question 4. How did Sally know that John was in the house? Question 5. What day off did John and Sally often say that they get or got? And question 6. Where were they on holiday when they were recalled for a court case? There we go. There we go. So answers to those very shortly. What's going on here? Not very much. I just moved the boat today. Moved it near. I had the old mattress, the old original mattress in the boat that's been here in the 9 years that I've been here, which I never really liked because it was someone else's. It was all old and horrible, and it had all kind of the copper, the white, not copper, the springs on the inside that were digging into my back. So I got a new mattress. But this is the problem, getting rid of stuff when you're on a boat. So I had to wait until I was passing a recycling center that was just near enough to the boat. So put it on my back. It wasn't as heavy as I thought. I managed to wheel it over there, got it there by opening hours. I'd already pre-checked with the recycling guys and said, do you accept mattresses? Yes. Do you accept old mattresses? Yes. Does that include the old coil mattresses? Yes. Do I have to have a car to turn up here? No. You've got to check these things. The amount of times I've been caught out going into a recycling place. Like a couple of years ago, I went in with some, I checked in advance. I said, do you accept old oil? Because obviously engines on boats, you've got to get rid of oil properly. And they went, yep. And I turned up on the day having lugged a couple of gallons of oil. And I turned up there and said, okay, where do I put my oil? And they went, oh, you need to be in a car. I'm like, what? They're like, you need to drive in here. And I was like, but the bit where I dropped the oil is like 10 feet away. And they went, no, you need to turn up by car. So you bastards. So I went outside, spoke to someone who was queuing up to get in, told them the problem. And I sat in their car and they drove me 10 feet. So there we go. What else is going on? Going to go off on a walk in a bit. I've just moved. It was really annoying. My next door neighbour has a disabled dog. Really cute. It's only got two legs, but it's got one of those kind of wheelie walkers. It's really cute. The dog's really sweet as well. And just kind of trundles along the towpath. Absolutely loves itself. What else is good? This is only going to be a short extra mile for this one. What else is going on? I didn't attend CrimeCon this year, but I turned up on Friday to meet some of the podcasters who were there because I was local. Very drunk. I did say to everyone I was going to leave by 10:30 because I needed to get my tube home. Otherwise, I'd be screwed because I was in the middle of nowhere. Missed my last tube home. And then found out that the next tube out and train wasn't till 3:30, so I went boozing with some of the guys from Gen Y and Bob from Twisted Britain. We got very drunk. We ended up in a very cheesy nightclub, dancing to some really hideous music, but very drunk. And then I made it home for about 7:30, and I thought to myself, do you know what? What's the point in going to bed? What really is the point in going to bed? I might as well just stay awake. So I spent the whole day trying to stay awake. And then when it got to 9:00 bedtime, I couldn't sleep because I was overtired. Oh, dear Lord. Dear Lord. Anyway, coming soon, myself and Mike from Dark Poutine are doing a meet and greet in London. Dates TBC. I will let you know. It'll be a Friday or a Saturday, end of July. Dates TBC. So tomorrow I'm going to try and work out a venue. But as soon as I can confirm everything, I'll post it on social media or on a version of one of these. So that's all good. Just wanted to say a thank you to new Patreon supporters who are Christine Webster and Mark Collins. Thank you both. Hope you're all enjoying all the goodies that are on there. All the exciting stuff. Whoa, very good. And thank you for supporting the show. Let's do the answers to the quiz questions. Question number one. How many years experience did John say that senior officers like constables to have before joining CID? See, I read it better that time. How many years experience do senior officers like constables to have before joining CID? It was 5 years. Question number two. What 1950s police TV show did John mention? It was Z Cars. Question number three. I called it Murder Squad, but what is it properly called? They're called Murder Investigation Teams, or MIT. Question number four. How did Sally know that John was in the house? Obviously, this is in reference to them on different shifts. She said there was nothing in the fridge. Question number five. What day did Sally and John say that they often got off? It was a Thursday. It's typical of most places, isn't it? They always give you a crappy day off. And question number six. Where were they on holiday when they were recalled for a court case? It was the Isle of Wight. There you go. I think that is me on that one. I think that's me done. Not really a lot to say because obviously I haven't got extra details to tell you about the case because this isn't a case. So next week, as mentioned, we're doing police interviews, which is really fascinating. And then we're going to do the basics of crime scenes. So have yourself a good week, everyone. Stay safe and be good.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Stay out of trouble, and etc. Best wishes, everyone. Be good. Bye.